Welcome to A Servant's Heartbeat. My name is Kristen. Thank you for listening and allowing me to share my heartbeat for the kingdom of God with you. So back in March, we did an episode called Finish Well. It was part three in a series about work and rest. We had a few episodes after that, so if you're looking for it, you may have to go back a few, but it was called Finish Well. And we talked about this Shunammite woman and Elisha and how that could be connected to rest. And when we're thinking about how to find that place of rest, a starting point can be to begin with the end in mind. And ultimately, that end I am aiming for is that eternal place of rest. I want to finish well. So for today's devotion, we're going to pick up where we left off on that work and rest thing. So consider this part four, maybe. So as a quick recap here, in 2 Kings chapter 4, we find that the Shunammite woman was aware of Elisha's passing by, and she and her husband made a chamber, an upper room, if you will, for Elisha and his servant, and she prepared a place for them to rest in their travels. And this all started with her awareness. She was aware of the man of God and his passing by. And by making that chamber for him, she established a priority in her life and in her home. So if you want to listen to the other parts, you can search for work and rest. And there are three parts before this, but they all kind of connect to one another. So picking up where we left off, verse 11 of 2 Kings chapter 4. And it fell on a day that he came thither, and he turned into the chamber and lay there. Now, I can only imagine that Elisha has been doing the work of the Lord, and he turns into this chamber that's made just for him, and he lays there. Now, I wonder what was going through Elisha's mind. How did he and Gehazi, his servant, feel about what this woman had done for them? She had prepared a place for them to come and rest. And I wonder what goes through the mind of God when we do things for him, when we make more space for him in our life. I wonder how he feels when we say, Lord, this is just for you. And perhaps Elisha was doing some thinking as he lay there, and he was considering all this Shunammite woman had done for him. And he tells his servant to go ask her a question. So in verse 13, and he said unto him, say unto her, behold, thou hast been careful for us with all this care. What is to be done for thee? Wouldest thou be spoken for to the king or to the captain of the host? And she answered, I dwell among mine own people. So Gehazi, on behalf of Elisha, asked this woman, we'll call her Miss Shunam for short, maybe. He asked this woman what could be done for her. He even offers her a couple of suggestions to consider. Elijah could go and speak on your behalf to the king or to the commander of the army. And her response was not this list of requests or even a particular pressing need. And going back to verse 8, maybe she didn't feel like she had any needs because verse 8 says she was a great woman. And to dig into that just briefly, that word great is referring to her wealth or her status. So she told them she was content to be where she was. In verse 13, she said, I dwell among mine own people. In other words, I'm good to be right here. I'm okay. Now, there is something to be said for contentment. We quote this scripture all the time, godliness with contentment is great gain. Paul also wrote, not that I speak in respect of want, for I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. So there is something to be said for that place of contentment. But there's also something to be said when I think I'm content and I'm okay. Yet God sees an opportunity to take me to a deeper level. In the case of our topic today, a deeper level of trust. And for some personal application, sometimes we can be rocking along all is well and good. We are living for God. We are doing the present duty. We don't have any pressing needs at the moment. We feel like I'm okay. I am learning to be content. And then something happens that shakes that contentment just a bit. And if you know this story, you have an idea of what that shaking was for Miss Shunem. In the next verse, Elisha asked the question again, what could be done for her? And he said, this is verse 14, what then is to be done for her? And Gehazi answered, verily she hath no son, and her husband is old. So another thought for us to consider here as we begin to talk about trust, you can't outgive God. In the previous verse, Elijah had drawn attention to how careful she had been to take good care of them and all that she had done for them. So when it comes to us being very careful or considerate or mindful of doing things for God, making room for him, if you've worked to build that room on the wall for him or that upper chamber in your life and you've made him top priority, that doesn't go unnoticed by God. Miss Shunem's friends may not have realized her sacrifice. They may not have seen her giving. Maybe her neighbors and her friends didn't see all that she had done for the man of God inside the house. But God knew. Sometimes there are things that take place on the inside of this house, us, that may not be seen by others, may not be noticed by others, but that giving, that choice, that space that you have made for God does not go unnoticed by him. You can't outgive the Lord. And this is not to say that we give things and do things just to be getting stuff in return. But there is something about it when we consider doing something for God, when we make that sacrifice or that commitment. He takes attention. He takes notice to that. So it could be that I give up something. Maybe it's you know, a habit or something that I'm trying to stop doing to make more room for God. Or maybe I begin to do something so I can consecrate and dedicate more of myself to him. Either way, I think the Lord takes delight and attention in our choices and decisions made for him. So continuing with Miss Shunem, Gehazi has an idea. She doesn't have a child, and her husband is old. And apparently, Elisha must have thought this was a great idea because his response was short and sweet. It was two words, call her. Now, I could be reading too much into this, but I find that verse 15 really caught my attention. It says, and he said, call her. And when he had called her, she stood in the door. Now, as a disclaimer here, I don't know if this is 100% correct, but it caught my attention, so I did a little digging. But it looks like the first time she was asked what could be done for her, that interaction looks like it was with Gehazi. Verse 12 says, and he, being Elisha, said to Gehazi, his servant, call this Shunammite. And when he had called her, she stood before him. So it looks like that the one she stood before was Gehazi in that moment. But the second interaction, she is called in verse 15, it says she stood in the door. Well, what door was that? Could it be that she was standing in the open doorway of the room she had just made for this man of God? And beyond that open door was going to be something new, something fresh, a calling. What a call. And I'm sure you've heard the phrase, the call of God, or this person or that person has the call of God on their life. Well, can you imagine getting that call from God when he calls you to that higher place because you've made yourself aware of him? You've made him top priority. You've made a chamber on the wall for him, an upper room for him. And there you are standing in the door, an open door. And beyond that open door is the plan that God wants to take you to next. And you've said, you're okay. I'm chill. everything's good. There's no pressing needs right now. But God has something greater he wants to take you to. Elisha tells this woman that she's going to have a child. Now, I am putting my simple-minded terms to this, but her response was not a dance and a shout and to run down the street to tell her neighbors, let's start planning a baby shower. She basically said, please don't lie to me. Reading verse 16, and he said about this season, according to the time of life, thou shalt embrace a son. And she said, nay, my Lord, thou man of God, do not lie unto thy handmaid. Now, it's one thing to trust that God is in the house. He is dwelling on the inside. I've made room for him in my life, and he's got the top floor. This vessel is for him. But a step up in that trust is when God turns our attention to a promise, maybe a promise from his word or one that is personal just to you. And maybe something that on the surface, it looks impossible. It looks unattainable. Something that is so far beyond what you think you could reach or achieve. You know, it's one of those moments when you feel like your trust in God is doing just fine. And then something happens and you realized, oh, there's a deeper level of trust. Oh, I didn't realize that I could get this deep in trusting God. I think I mentioned this in part two of Work and Rest, but there's that song we sing, 'Tis So Sweet to Trust in Jesus, just to take him at his word, just to rest upon his promise, just to know, thus saith the Lord. So that resting upon his promise, I may do lots of work for God, but have I learned to rest upon his promise? Have I learned to rest in the things that he says, in the things that I read in his word? There's another old song that says, Jesus said it. I believe it. His word cannot lie. Well, Miss Shunem said, do not lie unto thine handmaid. I get the feeling that even though she didn't ask for this, Elisha's words may have touched on something that she had buried long ago. You know, something she wanted, but now she felt like the opportunity and the time had well passed her by. But if Jesus said it, rest assured, I can take him at his word, even for the things I cannot see. And some things may surely involve the process of time. But if God said it, I can rest upon his word. We've been told that revival is coming, and I'm sure you have too. Revival takes work. Old-fashioned revival takes old-fashioned consecration. So in the example of revival, the working that we're doing for God, we can find rest in the promise, in his word. He said it's coming. Brother Phil White said once at a Heritage conference that he was talking about faith and trust. And he said, if daddy said, I'm getting a bicycle, no matter how long it takes, you better bet I'm going to buy a helmet. Because if daddy said it, it's coming. So I can trust, I can take God at his word. Now, for Miss Shunem, as you know, that child did come. He grows, and one day the young man dies. Ouch. He dies in her arms, and she takes him to the room she had prepared and lays him on the bed of the man of God. And maybe she did. The Bible doesn't make it clear. But it doesn't even say that she told her husband. So maybe he just thought the kid was up there resting, or the young man was up there resting. Now, it's one thing to trust that the baby was coming, because now it's in your hands. But when that child has died, this is calling for an even deeper level of trust. Job said, though he slay me, yet will I trust in him. I want to get a hold of something that anchors me so much in trust that things that happen and situations don't lessen my trust, But those moments cause me to lean even harder into God, finding rest in His promises and in His word, despite what I feel and despite the situation, despite how much it hurts. My circumstances don't change the character of God. It may be a fiery circumstance, but He's still a faithful God. So when I'm weary in the work, I can still say, Lord, I trust You. When I'm tired, this problem is bigger than me, but Lord, I trust You. Going back to Ms. Shunem here, from what I gather, it was about a 15 to 25 mile-ish trek to get to where the man of God was. And she took the horsepower of that day, a ride on a donkey, to get to the man of God who was at Mount Carmel. It was a press. And before leaving the house, her husband asked her why she was going to see the man of God today of all days. It wasn't the Sabbath. And her response to him was, "It shall be well." So verse 23 says, "And he said, wherefore wilt thou go to him today? It is neither new moon nor Sabbath." And she said, "It shall be well." Sounds like she had some faith or trust brewing in that one. I've read this story many times and have breezed over this mention of Sabbath in this verse. In part 3, we talked about the Sabbath and how in Exodus 20, verse 8, it tells us to remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. And holy is something that is set apart, or it's dedicated to the Lord. And when we set apart something for the Lord, that in itself is worship, because worship isn't tied to a particular day of the week, but it's a lifestyle. So it is worship to find that place of rest in the Lord, whether it be on Sunday, Monday, or fun day, no matter the day, when I intentionally seek out the Lord for rest. I think there's a level of trust that can be developed and found in that. Lord, I trust You with my time. Time with the Lord is time well spent. And we know we could be doing a whole lot of other things. But when I can give and dedicate that time to the Lord just to be with Him, It's like it communicates that, Lord, I trust You with this situation. You know, I'm not trying to handle things on my own and work it out on my own. I trust Your timing. I trust Your process. I trust the waiting. It shall be well. So continuing, the part of this story that perhaps sticks out the most for people is when she said, "It is well." So Elisha said to Gehazi, "Run now, I pray thee, to meet her and say unto her, is it well with thee? Is it well with thy husband? Is it well with the child?" And she answered, "It is well." Now, before she even got to Elisha, she had already said something similar to her husband, "It shall be well." And for some personal application, I don't know why some things may be happening, but I want to make up in my mind that I am going to intentionally seek the Lord, and it shall be well. Skipping to verse 28, when Miss Shunem finally got to Elisha, she said, "Did I desire a son of my Lord? Did I not say, do not deceive me?" And sometimes we may wonder, we may doubt, did God really mean what He said? Is this really for me? I don't think the Lord is calling us to greater places and levels of trust just to leave us hanging. Verse 27 lets us know that she found herself at Elisha's feet. And maybe I've taken a hard blow, or you've taken something that just knocks you down, and you may even have to crawl. Say hello to the woman with the issue of blood to get there. But my rest is in the Lord. It is well. I'm trusting in that. I found it interesting that in the phrase, "it is well," the Hebrew word used for well is shalom. And shalom means peace. So it's almost as if she was saying before she got there, it shall be peace. And when she got there, it is peace. There's something about having that peace of mind where we can say it is well. I may not feel well. I may be in a difficult situation. My circumstance may not have changed, but that does not change the character of God. So that statement, it is well, is anchored in trust. Isaiah 26:3 says, thou will keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee. So before I finish that verse, perfect peace. Both of those words, the underlying Hebrew word is shalom. Peace, peace, wonderful peace. Remember that that statement, it is well. When I am saying it's going to be all right, when I'm saying it shall be peace, that is anchored in trust. And that verse in Isaiah continues, because what? Because he trusteth in thee. Verse 4 says, trust ye in the Lord forever, for in the Lord Jehovah is everlasting strength. What a place to rest, to trust in the Lord forever. Now, she didn't ask, Miss Shunem didn't ask for all this to happen. But in this circumstance was an opportunity to trust the Lord. And opportunities to trust don't always feel pleasant. Just go read Job. And when we are introduced to this woman's story, we take notice of her mindfulness. She had an awareness of the man of God. And I think it was that same awareness, that same mindfulness that helped her to say in that trying time, it shall be well and it is well. There's perfect peace that comes when I can keep my mind stayed on him. That verse in itself is a promise from his word that I can learn to trust in. And we know the story doesn't end there. Skipping down to verse 30, Elisha has sent Gehazi ahead. And the mother of the child said, as the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. And he arose and followed her. A situation can happen that shakes us, that gives our faith a good testing. And some things can shake us to the point that we think, I can't do this. We think I can't hang on anymore. But if we could determine in our mind, Lord, I will not leave you. This hurts. This doesn't feel good. I don't like this, but I trust you. And just to brush over this thought really quickly, Elisha walking back with that woman to her dead son is quite the parallel with Jesus walking with Jairus, however you say his name, to his dead daughter. In both instances, that son and that daughter were raised to life again. That's our God. So to find that rest in trusting him, I don't want to run from him when I'm in a battle that really hurts, but to run to him, even if I have to crawl to him when I get there. I want it to be that I'm determined in my heart, in my soul, in my mind, and whatever strength I have left, I will not leave thee. I trust you. So as we continue reading this story, we find Elisha is in the room with her dead child, and the door is shut, and he's praying. And we can't always see what God is doing, just like she couldn't see what Elisha was doing. But there was a peace in knowing God is in the house. I've given this situation to him. I trust him. It is well. And we know the end of the story. This mama is able to hold her once dead child in her arms alive again. And wrapping this up, every step of this story was part of a process. From the building of that chamber, to preparing the inside of that chamber, to standing in the door of that promise that was made to her, to holding that promise, to the disappointment of losing sight of that promise, to the intentional seeking and determination to not leave Elisha's side, to walk back to that problem with him and trust that everything that was going on was going to be all right. All of that was part of a process. Now we can take the bird's eye view and look at Miss Shunem's process. And we know how the story plays out. We know how it ends. But where am I in my personal process of trusting the Lord? We all want rest. How much am I resting in trust? Sometimes we can get so worked up about a situation or a circumstance that is out of our control. And it legitimately may be out of our control. But how am I doing with learning to rest and trust? Just to take him at his word, just to rest upon his promise. So is the trial that you or I may be in right now a prime opportunity to learn to trust? Maybe even a deeper depth or level of trust. You know, we may see pain, and God may see the purpose of that pain as a way to draw us closer to him. It's worth the process if it will get me closer to him. If it will cause me to lean a little harder into him and determine more steadfastly in my mind, I will not leave his side. It's worth it. When I'm in a situation and I can't see him, I can't see what he's doing, I can't see the whole picture, there's an element of trust that says it shall be well. I'm going to press. I'm going to intentionally seek. I may even have to crawl. The work that I am doing may be tiring in this moment, but I trust him. So in thinking about work and rest and how do you balance that? We're all doing a lot of working. But in the midst of that working, have you learned to rest in that place of trust? That place where no matter how heavy the work is, no matter how much the load is at the moment, you can say in trust, it is well.